Chapter 16. I assured him, if I was with child, I would die for want of a midwife, rather than name him as the father of it, and he assured me I should never want, if I should be with child. These mutual assurances hardened us in the thing, and after this, we repeated the crime as often as we pleased, till at length, as I had feared, so it came to pass, and I was indeed with child. After I was sure it was so, and I had satisfied him of it too, we began to think of taking measures for the managing it, and I proposed trusting the secret to my landlady, and asking her advice, which he agreed to. My landlady, a woman, as I found, used to such things, made light of it. She said she knew it would come to that at last, and made us very merry about it. As I said above, we found her an experienced old lady at such work. She undertook everything, engaged to procure a midwife and a nurse, to satisfy all inquiries, and bring us off with reputation, and she did so very dexterously indeed. When I grew near my time, she desired my gentleman to go away to London, or make as if he did so. When he was gone, she acquainted the parish officers that there was a lady ready to lie in at her house, but that she knew her husband very well, and gave them, as she pretended, an account of his name, which she called Sir Walter Cleeve, telling them he was a very worthy gentleman, and that she would answer for all inquiries, and the like. This satisfied the parish officers presently, and I lay in with as much credit as I could have done, if I had really been my Lady Cleeve, and was assisted in my travail by three or four of the best citizens' wives of Bath who lived in the neighborhood, which, however, made me a little the more expensive to him. I often expressed my concern to him about it, but he bid me not be concerned at it. As he had furnished me very sufficiently with money for the extraordinary expenses of my lying in, I had everything very handsome about me, but did not affect to be gay or extravagant neither. Besides, knowing my own circumstances, and knowing the world as I had done, and that such kind of things do not often last long, I took care to lay up as much money as I could for a wet day, as I called it, making him believe it was all spent upon the extraordinary appearance of things in my lying in. By this means, and including what he had given me as above, I had at the end of my lying in about 200 guineas by me, including also what was left of my own. I was brought to bed of a fine boy indeed, and a charming child it was, and when he heard of it, he wrote me a very kind, obliging letter about it, and then told me, he thought it would look better for me to come away for London, as soon as I was up and well, that he had provided apartments for me at Hammersmith, as if I came thither only from London, and that after a little while I should go back to the Bath, and he would go with me. I liked this offer very well, and accordingly hired a coach on purpose, and taking my child, and a wet nurse, to tend and suckle it, and a maid servant with me, away I went for London. He met me at Reading in his own chariot, and taking me into that, left the servant and the child in the hired coach, and so he brought me to my new lodgings at Hammersmith, with which I had abundance of reason to be very well pleased, for they were very handsome rooms, and I was very well accommodated. And now I was indeed in the height of what I might call my prosperity, and I wanted nothing but to be a wife, which, however, could not be in this case, there was no room for it, and therefore on all occasions I studied to save what I could, as I have said above, against a time of scarcity, knowing well enough that such things as these do not always continue, that men that keep mistresses often change them, grow weary of them, or jealous of them, or something or other happens, to make them withdraw their bounty, and sometimes the ladies that are thus well used are not careful by a prudent conduct to preserve the esteem of their persons, or the nice article of their fidelity, and then they are justly cast off with contempt. But I was secured in this point, for as I had no inclination to change, so I had no manner of acquaintance in the whole house, and so no temptation to look any farther. I kept no company but in the family when I lodged, and with the clergyman's lady at next door, so that when he was absent I visited nobody, nor did he ever find me out of my chamber, or parlor whenever he came down. If I went anywhere to take the air, it was always with him. The living in this manner with him, and his with me, was certainly the most undesigned thing in the world. He often protested to me, that when he became first acquainted with me, and even to the very night, when we first broke in upon our rules, he never had the least design of lying with me, that he always had a sincere affection for me, but not the least real inclination, to do what he had done. I assured him I never suspected him, that if I had I should, not so easily have yielded to the freedom which brought it on, but that it was all a surprise, and was owing to the accident of our having yielded too far to our mutual inclinations that night. And indeed I have often observed since, and leave it as a caution to the readers of this story, that we ought to be cautious of gratifying our inclinations in loose and lewd freedoms, lest we find our resolutions of virtue fail us in the junction, when their assistance should be most necessary. It is true, and I have confessed it before, that from the first hour I began to converse with him, I resolved to let him lie with me, if he offered it. But it was because I wanted his help and assistance, and I knew no other way of securing him than that. But when we're that night together, and, as I have said, had gone such a length, I found my weakness. The inclination was not to be resisted, but I was obliged to yield up all, even before he asked it. However, he was so just to me, that he never upbraided me with that, nor did he ever express the least dislike of my conduct on any other occasion, but always protested he was as much delighted with my company as he was the first hour we came together. I mean, came together as bedfellows. It is true, that he had no wife, that is to say, she was as no wife to him, and so I was in no danger that way, but the just reflections of conscience oftentimes snatch a man, especially a man of sense, from the arms of a mistress, as it did him at last, though on another occasion. On the other hand, though I was not without secret reproaches of my own conscience for the life I led, and that even in the greatest height of the satisfaction I ever took, yet I had the terrible prospect of poverty and starving, which lay on me as a frightful specter, so that there was no looking behind me. But as poverty brought me into it, so fear of poverty kept me in it, and I frequently resolved to leave it quite off, if I could, but come to lay up money enough to maintain me. But these were thoughts of no weight, and whenever he came to me they vanished, for his company was so delightful, that there was no being melancholy when he was there. The reflections were all the subject of those hours when I was alone. I lived 6 years in this happy but unhappy condition, in which time I brought him 3 children, but only the first of them lived. And though I removed twice in those 6 years, yet I came back the 6th year to my first lodgings at Hammersmith. Here it was that I was one morning surprised with a kind, but melancholy letter from my gentleman, intimating that he was very ill, and was afraid he should have another fit of sickness, but that his wife's relations being in the house with him, it would not be practicable to have me with him, which, however, he expressed his great dissatisfaction in, and that he wished I could be allowed to tend and nurse him as I did before. I was very much concerned at this account, and was very impatient to know how it was with him. I waited a fortnight or thereabouts, and heard nothing, which surprised me, and I began to be very uneasy indeed. I think, I may say, that for the next fortnight I was near too distracted. It was my particular difficulty, that I did not know directly where he was, for I understood at first he was in the lodgings of his wife's mother, but having removed myself to London, I soon found, by the help of the direction I had for writing my letters to him, how to inquire after him, and there I found, that he was at a house in Bloomsbury, whither he had, a little before he fell sick, removed his whole family, and that his wife and wife's mother were in the same house, though the wife was not suffered to know that she was in the same house with her husband. Here I also soon understood that he was at the last extremity, which made me almost at the last extremity to have a true account. One night I had the curiosity to disguise myself like a servant maid, in a round cap and straw hat, and went to the door, as sent by a lady of his neighborhood, where he lived before, and giving master and mistress's service, I said I was sent to know how mister did, and how he had rested that night. In delivering this message I got the opportunity I desired, for, speaking with one of the maids, I held a long gossip's tale with her, and had all the particulars of his illness, which I found was a pleurisy, attended with a cough and a fever. She told me also who was in the house, and how his wife was, who, by her relation, they were in some hopes might recover her understanding. But as to the gentleman himself, in short she told me the doctor said there was very little hopes of him, that in the morning they thought he had been dying, and that he was but little better then, for they did not expect that he could live over the next night. This was heavy news for me, and I began now to see an end of my prosperity, and to see also that it was very well I had played to good housewife, and secured or saved something while he was alive, for that now I had no view of my own living before me. It lay very heavy upon my mind too, that I had a son, a fine lovely boy, about 5 years old, and no provision made for it, at least that I knew of. With these considerations, and a sad heart, I went home that evening, and began to cast with myself how I should live, and in what manner to bestow myself, for the residue of my life. You may be sure I could not rest without inquiring again very quickly what was become of him, and not venturing to go myself, I sent several sham messengers, till after a fortnight's waiting longer, I found that there was hopes of his life, though he was still very ill. Then I abated my sending any more to the house, and in some time, after I learned in the neighborhood, that he was about house, and then that he was abroad again. I made no doubt then, but that I should soon hear of him, and began to comfort myself with my circumstances being, as I thought, recovered. I waited a week, and 2 weeks, and with much surprise and amazement I waited near 2 months and heard nothing, but that, being recovered, he was gone into the country for the air, and for the better recovery after his distemper. After this it was yet 2 months more, and then I understood he was come to his city house again, but still I heard nothing from him. I had written several letters for him, and directed them as usual, and found 2 or 3 of them had been called for, but not the rest. I wrote again in a more pressing manner than ever, and in one of them let him know that I must be forced to wait on him myself, representing my circumstances, the rent of lodgings to pay, and the provision for the child wanting, and my own deplorable condition, destitute of subsistence for his most solemn engagement, to take care of and provide for me. I took a copy of this letter, and finding it lay at the house near a month, and was not called for, I found means to have the copy of it put into his own hands at a coffee house, where I had by inquiry found he used to go. This letter forced an answer from him, by which, though I found I was to be abandoned, yet I found he had sent a letter to me some time before, desiring me to go down to the bath again. Its contents I shall come to presently. It is true that sick beds are the time when such correspondences as this are looked on with different countenances, and seen with other eyes than we saw them with, or than they appeared with before. My lover had been at the gates of death, and at the very brink of eternity, and, it seems, had been struck with a due remorse, and with sad reflections upon his past life of gallantry and levity, and among the rest, criminal correspondence with me, which was neither more nor less than a long-continued life of adultery, and represented itself as it really was, not as it had been formerly thought by him to be, and he looked upon it now with a just and religious abhorrence. I cannot but observe also, and leave it for the direction of my sex in such cases of pleasure, that whenever sincere repentance succeeds such a crime as this, there never fails to attend a hatred of the object, And the more the affection might seem to be before, the hatred will be the more in proportion. It will always be so, indeed it can be no otherwise. For there cannot be a true and sincere abhorrence of the offense, and the love to the cause of it remain. There will, with an abhorrence of the sin, be found a detestation of the fellow sinner. You can expect no other. I found it so here, though good manners and justice in this gentleman kept him from carrying it on to any extreme, but the short history of his part in this affair was thus. He perceived by my last letter, and by all the rest, which he went for after, that I was not gone to Bath, that his first letter had not come to my hand, upon which he wrote me this following. Madam, I am surprised that my letter, dated the 8th of last month, did not come to your hand. I give you my word it was delivered at your lodgings, and to the hands of your maid. I need not acquaint you with what has been my condition for some time past, and how, having been at the edge of the grave, I am, by the unexpected and undeserved mercy of heaven, restored again. In the condition I have been in, it cannot be strange to you that our unhappy correspondence had not been the least of the burthens which lay upon my conscience. I need say no more, those things that must be repented of, must be also reformed. I wish you would think of going back to the Bath. I enclose you here a bill for number 50 for clearing yourself at your lodgings, and carrying you down, and hope it will be no surprise to you to add, that on this account only, and not for any offense given me on your side, I can see you no more. I will take due care of the child, leave him where he is, or take him with you, as you please. I wish you the like reflections, and that they may be to your advantage. I am, apostrophe etc., I was struck with this letter, as with a thousand wounds, such as I cannot describe. The reproaches of my own conscience were such as I cannot express, for I was not blind to my own crime, and I reflected, that I might with less offense have continued with my brother, and lived with him as a wife, since there was no crime in our marriage on that score, neither of us knowing it. But I never once reflected, that I was all this, while a married woman, a wife to Mr. the linen draper, who, though he had left me by the necessity of his circumstances, had no power to discharge me from the marriage contract which was between us, or to give me a legal liberty to marry again, so that I had been no less than a whore, and an adulteress all this while. I. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.